This funding drive is our only solution. Set the call out, comm unit for wide array transmission.
Captain, I have the coordinates on an alpha locator for funding drive donations that will enable us to get back on course. The number is 514-907-9424.
This is station CKUT 90.3 FM requesting financial aid for our funding drive. We require order to maintain...
Vacunas COVID-19 y usted.
¿Cómo sé que las vacunas COVID-19 son seguras?
Cuando algo es nuevo, es normal tener preguntas. Queremos que sepa que Health Canada solamente autoriza vacunas que son seguras, efectivas y de la más alta calidad. Canadá es reconocido a nivel mundial por sus altos estándares y su riguroso proceso de revisión de vacunas. Obtenga más información sobre las vacunas COVID-19 en canada.ca/COVID-vaccine. Un mensaje del Gobierno de Canadá.
1 year ago, CKUT shut down our studios for the safety of each other. Gradually, we adapted and found ways to continue to produce programming that reflects our shared experience, physically distanced but socially connected. Help us keep that connection by donating to CKUT. Call 514-448-4013. Pop a check in the mail, 3647 University Montreal, H3A2B3. Or donate online at ckut.ca.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
La vaccination contre la COVID-19 est en cours pour les groupes prioritaires. Allez sur québec.ca/vaccin-COVID pour suivre la séquence de vaccination prévue dans votre région et prendre votre rendez-vous en ligne. Au besoin, vous pouvez téléphoner au 1-877-644-4545. Après avoir reçu le vaccin, vous devez continuer de vous protéger en respectant les consignes sanitaires de base. C'est important. Le vaccin, un moyen sûr de nous protéger. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
In a world where corporate radio rules the airwaves. In a land where non-profit radio depends on donations to stay on the air. In a time when it costs $60 an hour to broadcast our signal, only one person can keep CKUT alive. You. You have a chance to be part of the action. You have a chance to be a hero. Donate to CKUT during its funding drive to keep quality programming alive. Call 514-907-9424 or visit www.ckut.ca to save our world.
Tuned into the universe of Latin Music Mondays. Welcome back once again to our program. We are very glad that you are out there hearing us on the dial at 90.3 and also by the World Wide Web, which implies that we are now being heard in the whole world. And even more up to the far Milky Way, right? This is DJ The Most High. I'm going to be with you for the next 2 hours. Today we do have a very special program. Today we are reviewing the influence of the African music and culture on the Caribbean region, on the Latin American region, and all over the world, right? And today we do have two special guests. We do have, first, guest at all, Aldo Massa. He is a musician coming from Montreal. Also, Aldo is a worldwide renowned drummer, and he had played over 100 albums and soundtrack, and he had collaborated with the artists all over the world, such as Celine Dion, Bon Jovi. I'm reading this from Wikipedia. You can go see on internet on Wikipedia and search Aldo Massa. You will see he had worked with James Brown, Chris DeBar, Frank Sinatra, and so many others. And you can see his discography. Also, Aldo, he's a teacher. He does teach at the Cosa Academy, in which he is also the artistic director, right? Well, and then after we will have none other than Poirier. Poirier is another musician coming from Montreal. Poirier has already 20 years of journey on the music scene all over the world, and Poirier had launched the last year his new long play called Soft Power, and we're going to talk also about his music experience, about Soft Power, and much more. So stay tuned here with us, DJ The Most High. We're going to leave you right away with Francesca Sacerdoti and the interview she did with Aldo Massa. They will be talking also about the Cuban teaching of music, because actually Aldo just wrote a book about the teaching of Cuban music, so that will be very, very interesting to listen. So stay tuned here in CKUT 90.3 Mega Radio Station. Right. So we will leave you right the way with Aldo Massa and Francesca Sacerdoti, right?
I'm Francesca on CKUT Assam 90.3 Latin Music Mondays. Welcome, bienvenue and benvenuti. With today's interview, we're going to explore the world of percussions through the words of our special guest, Aldo Massa. Aldo collaborated in his career as a musician with world-renowned artists such as Celine Dion, Jon Bon Jovi, James Brown, Nicky Janowski, just to name a few. And also he toured the world as a percussionist with his worldwide famous band, Repercussion. And he founded, together with his wife, the Cosa Academy here in Montreal. So welcome, Aldo, on the frequencies of Latin Music Mondays. And thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
Thank you, Francesca. It's always a pleasure.
That's great. So, Aldo, you emigrated from Italy to Canada when you were actually 9 years old, and you dedicated your entire life to music, not only to play it, but also to study it and to explore it from a pedagogical point of view. So, first off, I'd like to know how this passion for music and your interest for percussions in particular developed. What or who influenced somehow the most?
You know, that's an interesting question because, you know, I strongly believe that within us, something is always there and it takes just certain triggers to bring them out, or triggers or disasters or something to help you bring that thing out. So I'm not sure what mine was, but there are a couple that I can think of. I always was interested in music, but of course, before 9 years old, we were living in the village, and that, you know, that was not really an option back there, and unfortunately. But you know, my family, my father loved to sing. You know, there was always kind of music around indirectly. When I finally came to Canada, my father had left us when I was six. He was here before us, you know, like many other immigrants. And so when I came here at nine, our heads were more into the survival mode and making sure that we were all okay, everyone was okay, and you know, the education was important, and music had left was pushed in the back, and that became an interesting theme later for me. But as I was in school, specifically late grade school, I got interested in music and I started just playing a little bit with friends. And then, you know, one night, you know, the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, that famous night, it changed the world forever. The next day, we were all musicians, whether we played an instrument or not. That was really funny. But it did inspire and it brought out, as I said, that thing was that was probably always there. And many of my friends who had that same experience are still around today. I mean, I have this conversation with Greg Bissonette, who's the drummer for Ringo Starr right now. And he had the same experience. And many people who are professionals today had a beginning like that. For me, that was one of them. And then I was always interested in music because it was something that gave me my own voice. And I was always attracted to the drums specifically. And then later on, when I started playing more and more with friends, we'd hang out on Friday nights. You know, others were out stealing cars. I was playing music on a Friday night with my friends. And so my father was very happy, of course, because I stayed out of trouble. And I was having a great time. And the deal was that I never let down my education, but I could do whatever I want as long as I stayed out of trouble and stayed in school. So I did this. I was lucky, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is how your passion grew. But what can you tell us about the experience with your band Repercussion? You really toured the world. You've been trying throughout the world. I mean, so what is the best moment together you can recollect also as of now?
Well, I have many, Francesca. For me, it was just an incredible journey. And of course, before going to university, because I studied music at university, I was living in Ottawa. And I never knew that I was going to be able to do this. So you're always living in that kind of fear. What happens if I don't succeed? What happens if I don't get accepted? But I just worked very hard, put my focus on this because I really love to do this. Went to music camps, went to all kinds of stuff. Any money I made on all these side jobs during school always went, it was either clothes or music at the time. And then after a while, I stopped buying the clothes and I just concentrated on the music. When I was accepted at McGill here, I left a band that I was playing with in Ottawa, and they're starting to have you know, good success recording and stuff. And everyone thought I was crazy, but I knew what had to be done, and so I did it. And so when I came here, I met the guys at university with Repercussion. At the same time, I doing a regular television show. I started doing a lot of recording, a lot of accompanying other people everywhere. So it just kind of grew, and you know, really gave me the confidence that it could be done. And you know, you're living the dream day by day, and then one thing at a time. Then we started touring the world, and then I started touring and recording with, you know, many artists, you know, all over the place. And it was interesting to see, because you're seeing the world and you're getting paid for it, you know, and playing the music you love. And I never wanted to like kind of work for somebody else. So I had the opportunity to work with my group Repercussion, and we were all of the same mind. You know, when I'm collaborating with somebody, of course, if I'm working with Celine or if I'm working with whoever, I'm working for them, and they're the focus. But given that opportunity to have my own music, that I can compose, that I can create with my friends, that was parallel, and that was amazing. So being, for example, in China for the first time, when we went to the Great Wall, we went, you know, all over the place, and discovering these places and things and cultures that you only read about or heard about was amazing. And then, you know, I got very interested in not only percussion in general. I was a rock drummer to begin with, and I studied classical percussion, and I got a double degree in jazz performance as well. So that, you know, that really helped me because it expanded my personal horizons. And then I studied also ethnomusicology in graduate studies. And I was always interested how one culture's music related to another. And the one thing that's common to everyone and all of them is the drum. Everybody has a drum. Everybody speaks rhythm. Rhythm is really the international and universal language, you know.
Yeah, and, for sure.
And, you know, that has never stopped. I still continue that. And for me, it was just this path, you know, that knowing that, you know, the thing that I always say, we're very fortunate to be able to do what we do. And we have choices. You just have to work for it, you know, and enjoy it and give, you know. And then I was always a believer in, if you want to have a place in the world, you have to have something to give, something to offer, something to bring to the table. For me, it was music or knowledge or just being good people and being around good people.
Helping
others to understand that.
Now, that's beautiful also, as you were saying, like the dream of sharing this passion with your friends and travel the world doing and, you know, playing music, helping others. I definitely think it is something amazing, an amazing experience. And if you really have to recollect just one moment that you would like to share with us from the time that you were playing with repercussion, what would it be? Just one. It could be a funny one, a nice anecdote, whatever.
Oh, boy.
I know you have many.
A million. Yes, that's a very difficult one, Richard, to name just one. Oh, that is so hard. That is extremely hard. Just, I think the day we realized that we could do it, and you're on stage, and you're enjoying what you're doing, but also the audience is totally with you, and enjoying what you're doing. So you're connecting with a world that understands what you're doing. And I think if I was to sum it up, it would be that. I mean, there are many instances. You know, for example, I mean, it was a funny thing. We were very successful, and then PolyGram Records approached us to do. He said, we have this new technology where the visual discs, and you're the guys that we want to have on our label because you're so visual, you're musical, you're very different, you're interesting, and so we'd like to sign you onto the label. And so our question was, okay, that's fantastic. It was totally flattered. One question we have is the artistic control. Who decides what we put on those recordings? They said, well, we would have ultimate control, but of course you can add, you know, add what you want. So we said, okay, we'll get back to you. And we got back to them the next day and said, sorry, we're not interested. If we can't have, after all of this work, if we can't have artistic control, we're not interested. Sorry, but thank you for the offer. And then everybody thought we were totally crazy. But, you know, at some point you have to own yourself and you have to look at yourself in the mirror. And you know, of course, we lost millions of dollars. But
well, this is the other side of the coin, I believe.
but it's fun. We can still laugh about it, you know.
Okay. But now, Aldo, you know, like we are definitely super curious, and we really would love to listen to 2-3 pieces from your band. So what could we listen to?
One of the compositions that I think would be interesting is a piece called Sundance, one of my compositions that Repercussion recorded on an album called New Column.
That's great. And what about other two songs that you could recommend that we can listen to?
Another one would be one with vocals, and it's a mixture of kind of our time when we spent studying African music. So there's some singing and drumming called Niabeleko, which means life is music. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Another one that I'm going to suggest is Hong Kong. This Hong Kong, which is on the album New Kong. This one is interesting because it's wherever we travel, we would have influences of what we hear, what we came across musically. And we always incorporated these in our own compositions or arrangements of works. And again, this is a group of four percussions. So everything we played was percussion, including the bass. It was a vibraphone that had pickups that sounded like a bass. So we didn't have a bass player, a guitar player, or a keyboard player. We played practically all the instruments, but they were all percussion instruments. So we orchestrated it that way. Very interesting.
Perfect. That's amazing. So let's enjoy this beautiful music all together.
Thank you.
We are here back. Amazing, amazing music. Thank you so much, Aldo, for sharing these great tracks with us. And as I was saying, actually, at the beginning, your interest in music is also rooted in its pedagogical implication. So indeed, you have founded the Cause Academy. So what can you tell us about this activity of yours? When did the educational, this need to, with the educational journey actually started and developed?
I've always been interested in teaching, and I love to teach. It's like, you know, I always felt like a kid. I learned something and I wanted to share it, and just to see people light up in understanding how to do something, I always got a big charge out of that, because I had to work hard and I had to figure it out. And then just to be able to transmit that to someone else, who give them the tools to be able to give him or her that they could use to understand and get through this, because it's always, there's strategy, there's there's a way to do things that are better than others, and if someone, a master teacher, can show you, as others did to me, I thought that was great. So I've always been interested in that. And at one point, we started drum camp in Vermont, and it was a festival and camp at the same time, where we invited all the top drummers in the world. We had Neil Peart from Rush. We had Jimmy Cobb, who played with Miles Davis. We had Steve Smith from, let's say we had all the top people on the planet. Phil Collins, the drummer, Santana's drummer and percussionist, people from the New York Philharmonic, taiko drummers. So it was a total percussion experience with all the top people on the planet as your teachers and masters in an intimate situation. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole concept. So we've been doing that for 25 years, 26 actually now.
Wow.
And then in the meantime, then we started our school in Montreal, the COSA Academy. So, that was kind of head office, but also a physical place where we could teach, with our own faculty here in Montreal. And then we started expanding that to other camps and places around the world. With a camp in Italy, in China, collaborating with our Chinese collaborators and also Cuba. So we expanded that to about five different places all over the world. And then we would do these intensive weekends with masters in New York, in L.A., in Miami, different places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I believe it's an amazing experience to be in this sort of camp workshops, because I believe it's a full immersion within music with the greatest teachers. That's really a fantastic project. And also that knowledge of percussions, and specifically of the Cuban ones, merged with that of education, led you actually to write and develop a strategic book called Cuban Rhythms for Percussion and Drum Set, The Essential, who received important recognition, and that has also been chosen as the official textbook to study percussions in all the schools of Cuba by its government. So really great endeavor. And what pushed you to write this text? And actually, what is the story behind it and the people who helped you collaborate with you through this path to give birth.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. For 20 years now, I've been going to Cuba, and we lead groups. We take groups to Cuba, cultural groups, cultural exchange, high school ensembles or university. But we also have our own workshops that we've been doing in Havana and now also in Matanzas. In these workshops, people will come from all over the world to study with the masters of Cuba. So these are the top people. People like Changuito, who was with a group called Los Van Van back in the day when they invented the songo form, for example, the rhythm songo. And all those, these people are the very people who have invented those rhythms. So these, not only were they on our faculty, and they were the teachers in a small setting, but they also became very close friends and collaborators. We performed together a lot, and we worked together a lot. During the course of these, I would be the kind of the go-between. I would be the facilitator. I speak Spanish, so it was easy for me to to explain what was going on. Most of the faculty, the folks, in the artists and masters in Cuba did not speak English. So I was the facilitator and explaining the questions. I wasn't necessarily behaving like I'm the expert, but after a while, I realized that many of the questions were all coming the same, and there was a huge misunderstanding about Cuban rhythms. Most of the time, you know, and it's really interesting, most of the time it is not taught well, because most of the Cubans who come out of Cuba go on to perform, and, you know, they will not argue with anybody. They will not, you know, try and take a stand on something, but other people would. And they wrote things about Cuban music and where it came from, it, et cetera, et cetera. It was not always completely true, and for no fault of their own, only because, you know, there's the embargo in the United States over all these years that stops a lot of people from getting the information. And then most people learn the information from third and fourth sources, which looks right. And these are all top people, but they're always missing something, because also the Cubans themselves couldn't really explain it well. You know, there's masters. They could not explain it in such a way that we would understand. There's the question. So at one point I said, you know, I must put this in paper, in writing, and have a kind of a resource for the people who come to our workshops in Cuba, so that they could understand better what's going on and help their learning process a little bit better. And so I did. And then that morphed into a book. And I wanted to make a book that really showed clearly how to learn and how to teach. I have 75 play-along tracks with the book, so people can play along. Wow. I videotaped some of the artists in Cuba, you know, their hand position. So I tried to make it as much as possible Cuban and about them. You know, I didn't invent anything. I invented perhaps the methodology in this, how to understand this, what would this mean in our terms, so that now, as we're building musical and cultural bridges, we're also learning a bridge of understanding what they're doing. Because if you understand, then you're in a much better place, then you play the music much better. And so then Alfred Music in Los Angeles is distributing the book worldwide. And then when I showed it to the people at the Ministry of Culture, and the very people who are in the book, who are part of the book, were also a lot of people who are teaching in the conservatories, and they are the big masters, the top people in Cuba already. So when I presented it, they said, "We would love to have your book." So we presented it, and they accepted it as an official book. And we did last year, just before the pandemic in February. I was there with our ambassador and our representatives from Quebec to make the official presentation, and it was huge, because imagine, this is the first time ever that a book about their music written by somebody who is not Cuban and not from there, but they respect, you know, me as if I'm one of them in that regard. You know, the culture doesn't, you know, culture music doesn't have these walls or these, you know, these differences. So that's the nice thing about, the beautiful thing about music.
And it's amazing, and also definitely for sure an amazing moment, this recognition that you had. You really, I believe, really meant a lot. And now, like, we really have this willing of listening to some of these amazing Cuban tracks. So do you mind if we share a couple of them with our listener now? And which one would you like to share?
There is a group in Cuba called Climax, with a K. And the composer and the musical director of the group is the drummer, Giraldo Piloto himself. He's also, you know, part of what we do. Don is one of my very close friends and collaborators. So in his in one of his albums, Mi 21 Años, My 21 Years, there's the first song called Mi Ventana, and that would be one. And another one that I could suggest is another one called Si Tu No Estás Paña. Those two that I will suggest we listen to.
Perfect. So now we're going to listen to those. Thank you, Aldo.
tengo una obsesión. Veo a una mujer que se desnuda sin pudor. Ella está casada y no me cuadra esa jugada, porque me va a explotar el corazón.
Corre la cortina, te lo pido por favor. Yo estaba tranquilo, tú me nublas la razón.
Pienso en tu ventana y la conecto con tu cama,
rompiendo
un colchón. Mi vecina, ese cañón que me domina,
una suicida sin medida, que va jugando sin control.
Coquetea
como una gata enamorada, que contamina mi ilusión sin temor.
Y vecina, es el cañón que me domina, que no le importan las heridas, que ella propina su cantor.
Esa niña es una trampa a la deriva.
Esa fuerza divina que de una forma inexplicable mi sentimiento adivina.
Mi vecina,
hembra,
que me domina,
que me huela la cabeza, y tú sabes cuándo empieza, pero no cuándo termina.
pensaba que se iba, pero resulta que ya llegó. ¡Bum!
Pa que tú me enseñas lo que a mí me gusta ver.
No calientes la comida, si no te la vas a comer.
Pa que tú me enseñas lo que a mí me gusta ver.
Ay, nadie quiere a nadie, se acabó el querer. Esa cosita que tiene, yo me la voy a comer.
Pa' que tú me enseñas lo que a mí me gusta ver.
¿Qué voy a hacer contigo? ¿Qué voy a hacer, mujer? Ah.
Pa' que tú me enseñas lo que a mí me gusta ver.
Ahí, como dice el güiro.
Lo que a mí me gusta ver.
Agua que
vaya,
es
lo que a mí me gusta ver.
Yo no cambio madrugada por ver un amanecer.
Si piensas en jugar o en algo bien diferente,
te quiero preguntar si quieres salir conmigo.
Te encierro en mi armario. No vengas a jugar riéndote de mí, que voy a sorprenderte robando un beso en tu boca, un saludo corriente.
So here back, and thanks again for sharing us these two beautiful pieces. And Aldo, I remember in another talk we had together in the past that you were telling me why, or you were trying to explain to me why the term sometimes Latin music could sound quite confining or limiting or even too general when talking about the richness of, Cuban rhythms and music. And would you mind explaining to me and to Aldo again why?
And that's an interesting topic because people get not confused, but they use a general term without really understanding it, and that's normal. When we say, even amongst musicians, you say, well, let's play something Latin. Well, what does that mean? What they really mean is what we mean in the general sense, although it's not really explained. It's music that comes from the Latin America. That's Central and South America and everything in between. So that's a general term. But, you know, I always say, you know, why is it that sometimes we'll say, well, let's play something Brazilian, but we won't say something like, let's play something Argentina or Cuba. You know, and we could be specific, but because most of us, in the general sense, don't really understand the difference, and there are huge differences, although they may have some roots in Africa, some roots here and there, why can we not say music from Argentina? You know, we know tango, for example. In Brazil, there's the samba or bossa nova. Well, samba and bossa nova are not Cuban. They are Brazilian. Other rhythms in Cuba, you have cha-cha-cha. You have the son montuno. You have many, many rhythms that were developed, rhythms and musics and dances that go along with it that are strictly Cuban. And, you know, in fact, the instruments that we know as congas, which are really called tumbadoras, timbales, and bongo were instruments that were actually invented and created in Cuba. And there are special techniques that are used, but these are Cuban instruments. They're not born in Mexico. They're not, from Puerto Rico. They are Cuban. And that's interesting, you know, just like if you say jazz, well, that's a very American thing, you know, from New Orleans to Chicago to New York, you know, all over. But that's a music that's American, just like country.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be specific. So when someone say, well, let's play something Latin, it's interesting because if you're doing a recording or doing a piece or a performance, they say, well, let's play something Latin. That is like, okay, like which? And then when you know the differences, then it's very confusing because now if someone asks me, I have to ask, do you mean Peru, Argentina, Cuba, Mexico, or Venezuela? Because they have their own rhythm. Puerto Rico has their own, you know. So I think it's really interesting, if not important, just to know that difference.
No, that's great. Also, so trying to be much as specific as you can. So this is the message. If you know, just say it, the country where the rhythm, the sound comes from.
And, so if you don't know, you can always ask. There are people around who do know. And,
sure.
You know, just educating ourselves is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you. And Aldo, like, I know you're doing, you always do 1,000 million things. So what are the next projects that you have in mind or like you already have on the paper and you are developing in your next future, for your next future?
Well, this is going to sound funny, but, you know, the whole pandemic thing, of course, stopped all my international projects. I mean, we had a big festival in Macau. We had two festivals in Cuba. Yeah, we had one in Italy. So all the concerts, all the performances, all those events around the world suddenly last year, and it's a year now, stopped. And then, of course, now our school went completely online. So we're still teaching and teaching online. And in some ways, in the beginning, it was weird because we had to cancel things. We had, you know, the administrative nightmare suddenly showed up, and, you know, we took care of that. And then, you know, not going to the airport felt funny because typically I would be away 2 weeks a month, you know, all over the place. And if someone were to call me, I would say, oh, let me check my schedule. Well, now I know exactly what my schedule is all the time.
Remember? Yeah.
Funny. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise because what it allowed me to do was to stay home in one place, not travel, and focus on some other things. So I do have a lot of things that have been kind of backed up. So one of the things we did was digitize all the videos, all the footage for the last 25 years of all the great masters that have been at COSO in the concerts, in master classes, in special events. And these are huge, you know, and some of the great masters, some of whom are no longer with us. So we're going to put that up online on our new version of, you know, the COSO Academy and what it's going to look like when we all come out of this. So we're preparing all of that. But another interesting project that came out of this, it gave me the time to finally put all my, I have a lot of inventions that I've created over the years, believe it or not.
Wow.
And then I said, I'm looking at my, going around in my studio, and I'm looking at all these things. I said, wait a second. I have like 11 things that I have never patented, because I never had time. So I've been going through the process of the patenting, and, you know, I may come out with a whole product line under my name. So I'm working on that. And some of the things I'm going to propose it, and I have been proposing it to some other manufacturers, and some really interesting and innovative ideas.
Well, I can't wait. So I said it right when I said 1,000 million things in your mind and in your, like, around you going on. So it's like that. Aldo, thank you so much. So where people actually, where our listeners